And now, Chapter 17, Krishna the Ranchor. When Muchakunda, the celebrated descendant of the Ikshvaku dynasty, was favored by Lord Krishna, he circumambulated the Lord within the cave and then came out. On coming out of the cave, Muchakunda saw that the human species had surprisingly been reduced in stature to pygmy size. Similarly, the trees had also far been reduced in size, and Muchakunda could immediately understand that the current age was Kali Yuga. Therefore, without diverting his attention, he began to travel north. Eventually, he reached the mountain known as Gandhamadan, where there were many trees, such as sandalwood and other flowering trees, whose fragrance made everyone who reached them joyful. He decided to remain in that Gandhamadan mountain region to execute austerities and penances for the rest of his life. It appears that this place is situated in the northernmost part of the Himalayan mountains, where the abode of Naranarayan is situated. This place is still existing and is called Bhadarik Ashram. In Bhadarik Ashram, he engaged himself in the worship of Lord Krishna, forgetting all pain and pleasure and the other dualities of this material world. Lord Krishna returned to the vicinity of Mathura, where he fought with the soldiers of Kaliyavan and killed them one after another. After this, he collected all the booty from the dead bodies, and under his direction, it was loaded on bullock carts and brought back to Dvarka. Meanwhile, Jarasandha again attacked Mathura, this time with bigger divisions of soldiers numbering 23 Akshohinis. Lord Sri Krishna wanted to save Mathura from the 18th attack of the great military divisions of King Jarasandha. To prevent further killing of the soldiers and to attend to other important business, Lord Krishna left the battlefield without fighting. Actually, he was not at all afraid, but he pretended to be an ordinary human being, frightened by the immense quantity of soldiers and resources of Jarasandha. Without any weapons, he left the battlefield. Although his lotus feet were as soft as the petals of a lotus flower, he proceeded for a very long distance on foot. This time, Jarasandha thought that Krishna and Balaram were very much afraid of his military strength and were fleeing the battlefield. He began to follow them with all his chariots, horses, and infantry. He thought Krishna and Balaram to be ordinary human beings, and he was trying to measure the activities of the Lord. Krishna is known as Ranchor, which means one who has left the battlefield. In India, especially in Gujarat, there are many temples of Krishna known as temples of Ranchurji. Ordinarily, if a king leaves the battlefield without fighting, he is called a coward. But when Krishna enacts this pastime, leaving the battlefield without fighting, he is worshipped by the devotee. A demon always tries to measure the opulence of Krishna, whereas the devotee never tries to measure his strength and opulence, but always surrenders unto him and worships him. By following in the footsteps of pure devotees, we can know that Krishna, the Ranchurji, left the battlefield not because he was afraid, but because he had some other purpose. The purpose, as it will be revealed, was to attend to a confidential letter sent by Rukmini, his future first wife. Krishna's leaving the battlefield is a display of one of his six opulences. Krishna is the supreme powerful, the supreme wealthy, the supreme famous, the supreme wise, the supreme beautiful. Similarly, He is the supreme renouncer. Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that he left the battlefield in spite of having ample military strength. Even without his militia, he alone would have been sufficient to defeat the army of Jarasandha, as he had done 17 times before. Therefore, his leaving the battlefield is an example of his supermost opulence, renunciation. After traversing a very long distance, the brothers pretended to become tired. To mitigate their weariness, they climbed up a high mountain miles above sea level. This mountain was called Pravarshan due to constant rain, for the peak was always covered with clouds sent by Indra. Jarasandha took it for granted that the two brothers were afraid of his military power and had hidden themselves at the top of the mountain. First he tried to find them, searching for a long time. But when he failed, he decided to trap and kill them by setting fires around the peak. He therefore surrounded the peak with oil and set it on fire. As the blaze spread more and more, Krishna and Balaram jumped from the top of the mountain down to the ground, a distance of 88 miles. Thus, while the peak was burning up, Krishna and Balaram escaped, unseen by Jarasandha. Jarasandha concluded that the two brothers had burned to ashes and that there was no need of further fighting. Thinking himself successful in his efforts, he left the city of Mathura and returned to his home in the kingdom of Magadha. Gradually, Krishna and Balaram reached the city of Dvarka, which was surrounded by the sea. Following this, Sri Balaram married Revati, the daughter of King Revat, ruler of the Anarta province. This is explained in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. After the marriage of Baladev, Krishna married Rukmini. Rukmini was the daughter of King Bhishmak, ruler of the province known as Vidarbha. Just as Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Rukmini is the supreme goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi. According to the authority of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the expansion of Krishna and Srimati Radharani is simultaneous. Krishna expands himself into various Vishnu Tattva forms, and Srimati Radharani expands herself into various Shakti Tattva forms by her internal potency as multi-forms of the goddess of fortune. According to Vedic convention, there are 8 kinds of marriage. In the first class marriage system, the parents of the bride and bridegroom arrange the marriage date. Then, in royal style, the bridegroom goes to the house of the bride, and in the presence of Brahmins, priests, and relatives, the bride is given in charity to the bridegroom. Besides this, there are other systems, such as the Gandharva and Rakshasa marriages. Rukmini was married to Krishna in the Rakshasa style because he kidnapped her in the presence of his many rivals like Shishupal, Jarasandha, and Shalva. While Rukmini was being given in charity to Shishupal, Krishna snatched her from the marriage arena exactly as Garuda snatched the pot of nectar from the demons. Rukmini, the only daughter of King Bhishmak, was exquisitely beautiful. She was known as Ruchi Ranana, which means one who has a beautiful face, expanding like a lotus flower. Devotees of Krishna are always anxious to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord. His activities of fighting, kidnapping, and running away from the battlefield are all transcendental, being on the absolute platform, and devotees take a transcendental interest in hearing of them. The pure devotee does not make the distinction that some activities of the Lord should be heard and others avoided. There is, however, a class of so-called devotees known as Prakruta Sahajya who are very interested in hearing about Krishna's Ras Lila with the gopis, but not about his fighting with his enemies. They do not know that his bellicose activities and his friendly activities with the gopis are equally transcendental, being on the absolute platform. The transcendental pastimes of Krishna, described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, are relished by pure devotees through submissive oral reception. They do not reject even a drop. The story of Krishna's marriage with Rukmini is described as follows. The king of Vidarbha, Maharaj Bhishmak, was a very qualified and devoted prince. He had 5 sons and only 1 daughter. The first son was known as Rukmi, the second Rukmarata, the third Rukmabahu, the fourth Rukmakesh, and the fifth Rukmamali. The brothers had 1 young sister, Rukmini. She was beautiful and chaste and was meant to be married to Lord Krishna. Many saintly persons and sages, like Narad Muni, used to visit the palace of King Bhishmak. Naturally, Rukmini had a chance to talk with them, and in this way, she obtained information about Krishna. She was informed about the 6 opulences of Krishna, and simply by hearing about them, she desired to surrender herself to his lotus feet and become his wife. Krishna had also heard of Rukmini. She was the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, intelligence, liberal-mindedness, exquisite beauty, and righteous behavior. Krishna therefore decided that she was fit to be his wife. All of the relatives of King Bhishmak decided that Rukmini should be given in marriage to Krishna. But her elder brother, Rukmi, despite the desire of the others, arranged for her marriage with Shishupal, a determined enemy of Krishna. When the black-eyed, beautiful Rukmini heard of the settlement, she immediately became very morose. However, being a king's daughter, she understood political diplomacy and decided that there was no use in simply being morose. Some steps should be taken immediately. After some deliberation, she decided to send a message to Krishna, and so that she might not be deceived, she selected a qualified Brahmin as her messenger. Such a qualified Brahmin is always truthful and is a devotee of Vishnu. Without delay, she sent the Brahmin to Dwarka. Reaching the gate of Dwarka, the Brahmin informed the doorkeeper of his arrival, and the doorkeeper led him to the place where Krishna was sitting on a golden throne. Since the Brahmin had the opportunity to be Rukmini's messenger, he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the original cause of all causes. A Brahmin is the spiritual teacher of all the social divisions. Lord Sri Krishna, in order to teach everyone the Vedic etiquette of how to respect a Brahmin, immediately got up and offered him his throne. When the Brahmin was seated on the golden throne, Lord Sri Krishna began to worship him exactly as the demigods worship Krishna. In this way, he taught everyone that worshiping his devotee is more valuable than worshiping him. In due time, the Brahmin took his bath, accepted his meals, and took to rest on a bedstead completely bedecked with soft silk. As he was resting, Lord Sri Krishna silently approached and, with great respect, put the Brahmin's legs on his lap and began to massage them. In this way, Krishna appeared before the Brahmin and said, "My dear Brahmin, I hope that you are executing the religious principles without difficulty, and that your mind is always peaceful. Different classes of people in the social system are engaged in various professions, and when one inquires as to the well-being of a particular person, he should do so on the basis of that person's occupation. Therefore, when one inquires as to the welfare of a Brahmin, the question should be worded according to his condition of life, so as not to disturb him. A peaceful mind is the basis for becoming truthful, clean, equipoised, self-controlled, and tolerant. Thus, by attaining knowledge and knowing its practical application in life, one becomes convinced about the absolute truth. The Brahmin knew Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and still he accepted the respectful service of the Lord on the grounds of Vedic social convention. Lord Sri Krishna was playing just like a human being. Because he belonged to the Kshatriya division of the social system and was a young boy, it was his duty to show respect to such a Brahmin. Lord Krishna continued, "O best of the Brahmins, you should always remain satisfied, for if a Brahmin is always self-satisfied, he will not deviate from his prescribed duties. And simply by sticking to one's prescribed duties, everyone, especially a Brahmin, can attain the highest perfection of all desires. Even if a person is as opulent as the King of Heaven, Indra, if he is not satisfied, he inevitably has to transmigrate from one planet to another. Such a person can never be happy under any circumstances. But if one's mind is satisfied, even if he is bereft of all possessions, he can be happy living anywhere." This instruction by Krishna to the Brahmin is very significant. The purport is that a true Brahmin should not be disturbed in any situation. In this modern age, Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmins have accepted the abominable position of Shudras or less, and still want to pass as qualified Brahmins. Actually, a qualified Brahmin always sticks to his own duties and never accepts those of a Shudra or of one less than a Shudra. It is advised in the authorized scriptures that a Brahmin may, under awkward circumstances, accept the profession of a Kshatriya or even a Vaishya, but never is he to accept the profession of a Shudra. Lord Krishna declared that a Brahmin should never be disturbed by any adverse conditions if he scrupulously sticks to his religious principles. In conclusion, Lord Sri Krishna said, "I offer my respectful obeisances to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, for the Brahmins are always self-satisfied, and the Vaishnavas are always engaged in actual welfare activities for human society. They are the best friends of the people in general. Both are free from false egoism, and are always in a peaceful condition of mind." Lord Krishna then desired to know about the rulers or kshatriyas in the Brahmin's kingdom. So he inquired whether the citizens of the kingdom were all happy. A king's qualification is judged by the temperament of the people in the kingdom. If they are happy in all respects, it is to be understood that the king is honest and is executing his duties rightly. Krishna said that the king, in whose kingdom the citizens are happy, is very dear to him. Of course, Krishna could understand that the Brahmin had come with a confidential message. Therefore he said, "If you have no objection, I give you liberty to speak about your mission." Thus, being very satisfied by these transcendental pastimes with the Lord, the Brahmin narrated the whole story of his mission in coming to see Krishna. He got out the letter Rukmini had written to Krishna and said, "These are the words of Princess Rukmini. My dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears, your name, fame, and qualities. Thus all his material pangs subside, and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he always sees you within himself. And by this process, all his desires are fulfilled. Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may suspect that I am an unmarried young girl and may doubt my steadiness of character. But my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, though not yet having left her home, or even any woman of the highest chastity, would desire to marry you, being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position. I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, and are very kind toward your devotees. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maidservant. My dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul unto your lotus feet. I have selected your lordship as my husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be a ludicrous affair. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I am taken away by Shishupal and other princes like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work, like digging wells and growing trees, or pious activities, such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, and serving superiors like the spiritual master, Brahmins, and Vaishnavas. By these activities, perhaps, I have pleased the supreme personality of Godhead, Narayan. If this be so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I may not be touched by Shishupal and his company. Rukmini's marriage with Shishupal was already settled. Therefore, she suggested that Krishna kidnap her so that this might be changed. This sort of marriage in which the girl is kidnapped by force is known as rakshasa and is practiced among kshatriyas or men with an administrative martial spirit. Because her marriage was already arranged to take place the next day, Rukmini suggested that Krishna come there incognito to kidnap her and then fight with Shishupal and his allies like the king of Magda. Knowing that no one could conquer Krishna, who would certainly emerge victorious, she addressed him as Ajit, the unconquerable. Rukmini told Krishna not to be concerned that many of her family members, including other women, might be wounded or even killed if the fighting took place within the palace. As the king of a country thinks of diplomatic ways to achieve his object, Rukmini, being the daughter of a king, was diplomatic in suggesting how this unnecessary and undesirable killing could be avoided. She explained that it was the custom of her family to visit the temple of the goddess Durga, their family deity, before a marriage. The Kshatriya kings were mostly staunch Vaishnavas, worshipping Lord Vishnu in either the Radha Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan form. Still, for the material welfare, they used to worship the goddess Durga. They never made the mistake, however, of accepting the demigods as the Supreme Lord on the level of Vishnu Tattva, as did some less intelligent men. To avoid the unnecessary killing of her relatives, Rukmini suggested that it would be easiest for him to kidnap her while she was either going from the palace to the temple or else returning home. She also explained to Krishna why she was anxious to marry him, even though her marriage was to take place with Shishupal, who was also qualified, being the son of a great king. Rukmini said that she did not think anyone was greater than Krishna, not even Lord Shiva, who is known as Mahadev, the greatest of all demigods. Lord Shiva also seeks the pleasure of Lord Krishna in order to be delivered from his entanglement in the quality of ignorance within the material world. Although Lord Shiva is the greatest of all great souls, Mahatmas, he keeps on his head the purifying water of the Ganges, which emanates from a hole in this material universe made by the toe of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is in charge of the material quality of ignorance, and to keep himself in a transcendental position, he always meditates on Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Rukmini knew very well that obtaining the favor of Krishna was not easy. If even Lord Shiva must purify himself for this purpose, surely it would be difficult for Rukmini, who was only the daughter of a Kshatriya king. Thus, she desired to dedicate her life to observing severe austerities and penances, such as fasting and going without bodily comforts. If it were not possible in this lifetime to gain Krishna's favor by these activities, she was prepared to undergo austerities lifetime after lifetime. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. Such determination, as exhibited by Rukmini Devi, is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor. One should be strongly determined in Krishna consciousness. That is the way to ultimate success in Krishna consciousness. After explaining Rukmini Devi's statement to Krishna, the Brahmin said, "My dear Krishna, chief of the Yadu dynasty, I have brought this confidential message for you from Rukmini. Now it is placed before you for your consideration. After due deliberation, you may act as you please. But if you want to do something, you must do it immediately. There is not much time left for action." Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second volume, 17th chapter of Krishna, Krishna the Ranchor.